Welcome to another edition of the TDN Writers Room. My name is Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News.
I'm Randy Moss with NBC Sports, also with the Buyer's Speed Figure team here. And if you hear lightning or thunder, it's because we're having some storms here in suburban Minneapolis. But other than that, all is well, Zoe.
I did hear that. I just thought you were really hungry for a minute. I was going to give someone to feed you. It sounded like your stomach was rumbling. I'm Zoe Cadman here in one of the palatial conference rooms at the OBS sales. I have looked at about 1,200 horses. It looked like a funky tennis match going backwards and forwards for about the last week, but we're here and we're trying to buy some horses. I'm representing, wearing my Speedway hat, and I'm drinking some smart water. We'll see how smart it makes me. Does this actually work? Anyone? I'm not sure.
Sure there's not vodka in there, Zoe, knowing you?
You know, that's a good point. That is a good point. Randy's shaking his head. It's not going to make me any smarter, which means he's tried it. Okay.
All right. Well, guys, off-track news. For the 4,819th time, we have to talk about Baffert and Amer Zeidan. Baffert is not party to the suit, but is trying to sue to get his horse Muth into the Kentucky Derby. There was a hearing on Monday in a judge by the name of Mitchell Perry in a courtroom in Kentucky. And he said he would have a ruling by the end of the week. Reading between the lines, I don't think this is going to fly. A couple of things that he mentioned during the trial, he wants the Kentucky Attorney General to issue an opinion on whether or not it's a frivolous lawsuit. He says the writer for the Louisville Courier Journal says Perry drilled Zeidan why he waited until April when he knew back in July that Bob Baffert's horses were banned from the Derby. He said the late hour of his request puts an incredible time crunch on everyone involved, including this court. Randy, we don't know what is going to happen here, but, you know, I don't blame Zeidan for trying. I mean, you know, he's got the resources. This is how America works. You know, you fight for yourself. You try to win cases in the courts. He can obviously afford this. But my gut feeling is it's not going to happen.
I listened to the whole thing. I was on a patched in to listen to the whole hearing. And judges are notoriously difficult to read by things that they say and the questions that they asked. He was very involved asking questions to both sides. First, it was Zeidan's attorney that spoke, and then it was Churchill Downs' attorney that spoke. And the constitutionality part of it, I mean, he requested a rescheduling of the hearing to 1:30 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday so that the Kentucky Attorney General could weigh in on not just the constitutionality of the Zeidan side, but also the constitutionality of Churchill's motion to dismiss. So it goes both ways, and he wants to make sure that the Attorney General has a chance to weigh in, if he even chooses to weigh in at all. And the judge said he hoped to make a decision to be ready on Wednesday, if not certainly by the end of the week. My gut in listening to it is that the primary concern, obviously, of the judge is the timing of the lawsuit. He expressly asked Zeidan's attorney, this could have been filed last July when Churchill Downs first extended the Baffert ban from 2 years to 3 years. Why did you not file it then? You could have filed it. I could have ruled on it then, and we wouldn't have to be going through this right now, right before the Kentucky Derby. And the response from Zeidan's attorney was that back then in July, Churchill Downs Incorporated undoubtedly would have argued that there were no damages at that point, that there was it was very speculative whether Zeidan could have any horses in the Kentucky Derby in 2024. He said, so we decided to wait so that our case would be much stronger after Muth won the Arkansas Derby and came back well, that there would be damages if if the 3-year ban was upheld. Churchill Downs made the point, obviously, that other owners and trainers who, quote, played by the rules would be affected by this, and their horses would be bumped down and even off the list if Baffert's horses were allowed to be put in. Zidane's attorney countered by saying, if the evidence shows that the extension of the ban from 2 years to 3 years was not valid, then if any other trainers, owners are impacted by this, it's Churchill Downs' fault. They're the ones that made their own bed, so to speak. They're the ones that brought this problem that caused us to file this lawsuit. So, you know, if you rule that 3-year extension was not appropriate, then that takes care of any of the problems that other owners might encounter. But he did come back to that several times to both attorneys about the timing of it. And I think that is a concern. And if this doesn't go through, if they don't rule in Zidane's favor, I think that will undoubtedly be the reason why. Because otherwise, I think Zidane has a very strong case.
And I'm in agreement with every single thing that you just said then, Randy. And you're right about the timing of it, because it just seemed like everyone took a deep breath. What was it, 3 weeks, a month ago, when, you know, Bob wrote the letter to say they were dropping everything and weren't pursuing it. And we were like, okay, great. Well, you know, next year for sure, Bob will be back in the Derby. And now, is this just going to rub them the wrong way? Is this going to exacerbate a problem? I mean, it does have merit, because one thing we know for sure is that Churchill Downs moved the goalposts. The goalposts were moved. It was supposed to be 2 years and then it was 4 years. And that is not fair. Whatever you think about Bob and how he's gone around this, that was not fair. So, you know, they have the ability to just move them again and do what they want. That's my biggest concern moving forward with Bob going in the Derby. We don't know. And we're filming this on Tuesday, just in case anyone's...
Exactly. Right. Yeah, I wanted to mention that. We're filming this on Tuesday, so by the time you're viewing this, you might know the end of the story, but we're trying to fill in the blanks as best we can right at this point. So I want to pick up on your point. If I were Zidane, I'd be a little worried that Churchill is so vindictive that they say, God damn it, you're suing us again. Well, congratulations. You're not running in 2025.
I know. And Bob has nothing to do with this suit. It's right. Purely Zidane. So I haven't spoken to Bob. I don't know. But I mean, it's a tightrope you're walking. This has already happened once. There's nothing to say it won't happen again.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So,
yeah. I mean, I asked Bob about the lawsuit prior to the Santa Anita Derby. And very predictably, Bob said, look, I don't want to talk about it. It's not my lawsuit. I have nothing whatsoever to do with it other than the fact that I train these horses. Yes, would I love to be back at Churchill Downs? Yes, but it's not something that I'm going to comment on at all. So he's pulling it pretty close to the vest. The part about Churchill Downs being able to do anything it wants, that was part of the Churchill attorney's argument to the judge, is that on the stall applications, on the nomination forms and all that, it expressly says that Churchill Downs has the right to exclude any horse from any race for any reason that it chooses. And the Churchill Downs attorney said that when that was signed, that effectively becomes a contract. So that's also part of the Churchill Downs argument. Hey, we can ban whoever we want for whatever reason we want for however long we want.
Well, I'm not as confident as you are, Randy, that they have a good case, but we shall find out. Hopefully this won't drag on any longer than maybe another couple of days. So other things in the world of tilting scales of justice, we've seen this before and we have it again. We have a positive for metformin that came out from Hyrou on trainer George Weaver. I believe this is the seventh metformin case that they've had to deal with, which started with Jonathan Wong way back when. Metformin is a human drug used for type 2 diabetes. And already George Weaver and his attorney have said that the groom of the horse was a metformin, had a prescription for it, had use for it. You know, this comes up again and again and again. And I don't envy being in the position of the Haiza Haiwu people, because there's some real tricky things that they have to navigate here. But this to me is still one more case where an honest trainer did nothing wrong. I mean, you just need a modicum of common sense. George Weaver's been around for a long time. He's got a great record, a high-class guy. He's not out there juicing horses. He didn't do anything wrong. Now, at the end of the day, I doubt he's going to have to serve a 2-year suspension. Usually Heise is now, you know, cutting deals with them or whatnot. I don't have the answer, but them continually nailing people where just, I mean, I'm sure Randy and Zoe both would agree. I mean, there's no chance, zero chance that he doped a horse with this drug. We need to find a better system. And maybe it is metformin before Heise came in was, you only got a 15-day suspension, which was Wesley Ward got. He had a metformin positive at Monmouth. So maybe that's one solution right there. Take it off the banned substance list, put it on the controlled substance list where the penalties are much smaller.
Well, you know, look, Heise is in a very tough spot. I agree with you, Heise and Haiwu. There is some anecdotal evidence from what I've read that metformin can possibly have a positive impact on racehorse performance. So, you know, I mean, Heise always has to consider the possibility that, and I'm not saying this is what happened at all with George Weaver, because I totally agree with you, everything you said about George. But, I mean, you don't want a situation where if one of your grooms in the barn is on type 2 diabetes medication, then suddenly that's a free pass for the trainer to say, oh, okay, I can use metformin on my horses and I can always say it's contamination or something like that, you know. And that's a little bit of a ridiculous analogy, but, you know, it's a positive. And so they're in a very tough spot. They're doing whatever they can do, and they've taken a lot of steps right now, even with the FTC, to try to change the regulations as it pertains to contamination from human, commonly used human medications. And metformin is apparently the third most prescribed medication in the United States. But until that happens, I mean, right now, the most recent metformin positive, if I'm not mistaken, was where a groom also, who handled the horse, also had type 2 diabetes and was on metformin. And it was reduced from 2 years to 2 months. I don't know how much lower they can go than that, but that might be what, if they can prove the situation with the groom, that might be what George Weaver's looking at. And even 2 months is unfortunate, but I mean, it's a positive test.
It's contamination across the board. And I actually read a tweet from Jonathan Wong just the other day when this came out. And it basically said, it's nobody's problem until it's yours, because no one really came forward to support Jonathan Wong. And now it's happening to, you know, George Weaver, and all hell has broken loose, and blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's just, do you win at 40%? Do you win at 20%? Oh, well, he wins at 40, so he has to be guilty. Is he? I don't know. He wins at 15, 20. Well, then no, of course he's not guilty. It's just one of those. There has to be a way to figure out how to police this better. And I'm for Heise, but this is getting to be ridiculous. We talk about it every week.
Yeah, absolutely. So one more thing too, and they, I think this is a quote from Lisa Lazarus or somebody from Haiwu Heise. They said, you know, it's not our job to figure out who the good guys are, right, and who the bad guys are.
Right.
And I think the three of us and a lot of other people are kind of guilty of doing that. We know George Weaver's a good guy. To be honest with you, are we really sure about Jonathan Wong, who kind of, you know, is type of trainer that I think raised some suspicions. So, but that's not their job to say trainer A is a good guy. He would never juice a horse, and trainer B's a crook and a bum. He would do it all the time. It's, and I do agree with him. That's right. You can't bring personalities and reputations into it. Like, right. It has to be, which I did to start this off saying what a great guy George Weaver is. He's never cheated in a million years. But I do understand that. I think, again, the only thing, you know, and Randy, you were talking about the 2 months. I just think in this one particular drug, it ought to become a controlled substance, because apparently it was before Heise took over. And, you know, we weren't getting these, you know, metformin positives left and right. And this isn't the last of it. I mean, with this stuff being so prevalent in society. I mean, look how easy it is going to be for your horse to test positive for this stuff.
Do want to remind you that the TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Keeneland has cataloged 111 horses for the April selected horses of racing age sale to be held after the last race on the last day of the Keeneland Spring Meet. If you don't know when that is, it's April 26th. Horses entered in the sale include more than a dozen winners of their most recent races and more than 20 horses who have owned an 80-plus speed figure. That's pretty good in my mind, in their recent starts. The catalog is dominated by lightly raced stocks with 69 entries that have four or fewer starts. That's a bit of a tongue twister. 69 entries that have four or fewer starts. Also, entries for the September yearling sale are now open. The sale will start on Monday, September the 9th. Let me write that down because I will be there. And the entry deadline is May the 1st. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
When the spring meet ends, summer success begins. Buy, sell, fresh winners, hot prospects. One night, one chance. Finish strong. Don't miss out. The Keeneland April Selected Horses of Racing Age Sale. Friday, April 26th.
This week on the TDN Writers Room, we welcome back our new advertiser, Pleasant Acre Stallions in Ocala, Florida, a 400-acre property which is home to 13 stallions, including Chess Chief. Now, I'm down here in Ocala, Florida. Perhaps I might go and give them a visit. All right, Chess Chief, if you remember him, he is a graded stakes winning son of Into Mischief. He is new to stud in 2024. I can tell you he is one good looking horse. He was the winner of the Grade 2 New Orleans Classic and the Tenacious Stakes at the Fairgrounds. He is out of a Grade 1 winning Mineshaft mare. Her name was Unblessed. Chess Chief was also the Virginia bred Horse of the Year and older champion in 2021. He's about as solid as they come, being campaigned over six consecutive seasons. Think about that. Six. Most only stand for one. He raced from 2 to 7, where he beat talented Grade 1 winners such as Mucho Gusto, Long Range Toddy, and Roadster twice. And I do remember him running in the 2019 Bluegrass, where Vekoma and Win 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 were just a few lengths in front of him. Chess Chief stands for $5,000.
All right, and I've been really looking forward to this part of the podcast because this particular Fastest Horse of the Week is brought to you by Two Phils, one of the fast sires at Windstar Farm. At Windstar, they like to say that Two Phils has Danzig speed. Why would they say that? Because Two Phils is a son of Heartspun, and Heartspun is a son of Danzig. And any regular consumer of this podcast knows where I stand on Two Phils. I think he was the best three-year-old in 2023. I thought he should have won the Kentucky Derby. Only a very hot pace kept him from winning. He was the first three-year-old last year to run three consecutive 100-plus buyer speed figures, including the 105s in the Derby and the Ohio Derby. And oh, by the way, the 105 in the Kentucky Derby is equal to or higher than every Derby winner in the last 15 years. Two Phils won graded A graded stakes as a two-year-old, multiple graded stakes as a three-year-old, and his four career stakes wins were by a combined 26 lengths. Two Phils standing his initial season at Windstar Farm for a fee of only $12,000. It's even better, $12,500. Now, we had quite a few solid buyer speed figure performances last week, but the Fastest Horse of the Week, no surprise, Master of Seas, who ran for the first time since his unbelievable closing burst in the Breeders' Cup Mile to win the Maker's Mark Mile at Keeneland and earn a buyer speed figure of 107. And we will talk a little bit more about that Maker's Mark Mile performance right now. Bill?
Well, let's talk about it. The story is not only that Master of the Seas won, but stablemate Naval Power was second. You know, we were talking about with the Metformin thing. We keep talking about the same old thing. It's the same thing with Charlie Appleby. You know, we just come on. This guy's unbelievable. He wins again. But you know, it's a story that needs to be told over and over and over again. Here are his statistics in North America. He's 31 for 81. That's a winning rate of 38%. All 31 of his winners are stakes winners. 23 of them are grade ones. I mean, that is just amazing stuff. A foreign trainer, an outfit from Europe, winning 23 grade ones in North America. And Masters of the Seas is a absolutely good one. I'm sure he'll be pointing him now for the Breeders' Cup Mile again. And it's good to see good horses run and put on a show. And Charlie Appleby, you can't beat this guy, Zoe. You just can't.
No, it's almost impossible. You can't even run second nowadays because he's running two.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, good luck with that. He was just terrific. And I mean, let's face it, this guy runs on any kind of ground. He runs on rocks. When it came up yielding, I was like, nobody is beating him. And, you know, 137 on a rain-soaked turf course at Keelan that is called yielding. Now, I've been on the Keelan turf course when it's been called yielding, and it was up to my knees. So to put out that kind of time and that kind of performance was just absolutely terrific. He is just a very, very cool horse. And a great ride.
Yeah, William Buick. And Appleby is making North America more and more a part of the program, of his program, coming from the UK. I'm going to take this in a slightly different direction because I think this is interesting. They sent five horses from the UK to Keeneland over the last week or two. Master of the Seas won the Maker's Mark. And, of course, Naval Power finished second. Two good efforts. English Rose, a very good second in the Jenny Wiley, despite being very rank throughout most of the early part of that race. Mischief Magic was a very strong second in the Shakertown, and Musical Act was fifth in the Transylvania. All five of those horses right now have remained in the United States, and they are all nominated for Kentucky Derby weekend stakes races. Appleby has never run a horse. He's never had a starter on Kentucky Derby weekend. He's had a couple of noms that he didn't choose to bring over. But Master of the Seas, Naval Power, nominated for the Turf Classic, English Rose for the Distaff Turf Mile, Mischief Magic for the Twin Spires Turf Sprint, Musical Act for the American Turf. And they're also planning to bring over Legend of Time, who beat Musical Act by 4¾ lengths at Maidan in a listed stakes race, a minor stakes, a little bit earlier. So the attack by Charlie Appleby on American racing is continuing, and it now apparently is branching out to cover Kentucky Derby weekend as well. And won't it be interesting to see, if it happens, to see Master of the Seas now try to stretch out from a mile to a mile and an eighth in the Turf Classic? He has won a group stakes in Europe before at the mile and an eighth distance, and looking at the way he runs and his pedigree, you wouldn't think that a mile and an eighth would be any problem at all.
Wow. Is that the reason you're wearing blue today, Randy? Godolphin blue?
Coincidental. This is NBC blue, right? There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, one other thing. You mentioned the Jenny Wiley. How about that ride Frankie put up?
Oh.
How about that? Fresh off
the six. How about this? Frankie Dettori and Chad Brown, the horse Beau Cachet, pays $53.
What?
Where were we?
I know.
Gina Romanica on the grass.
Gina Romanica was 7-2. Surge Capacity. These are all Chad Brown horses. Surge Capacity 4-1. Fluffy Sox 13-1. However you say her name. Beau Cachet 25-1. Gaffleone rode Gina Romanica. Rosario rode Surge Capacity. Irad rode Fluffy Sox. Jose Ortiz, which would have been another go-to guy for Chad Brown, was riding Didia, who finished finished third in there. Ran pretty well. She was one of the favorites. So Frankie was left. They take Frankie wire to wire, easy pace, 25-1. Yeah, where were we?
And listen to this. This is the best part. They interviewed Chad before the race, right? And Chad is like, you know, where are your runners going to be in the race? And he's like, well, so-and-so is going to be here. This one's going to go forward. And Beau Cachet, well, she's going to come from the back of the pack.
Frankie had other plans. It's funny. We would talk to when I talked to Baffert before the Santa Anita Derby, and I think I told the story on the Santa Anita Derby telecast. But when Frankie first rode Imagination, I think it was the San Felipe.
Yeah.
Baffert started giving Dettori all these instructions in the paddock. Okay, I want you to do this. I want you, and Frankie held his hand out and said, Bob, how is the horse doing? And Bob said, He's doing really well, Frankie. And he said, that's all I want to know.
Yep.
And he goes out there and does his thing, right? Yeah. Maybe that was the Chad situation. I don't want to hear it. Strategy.
Yep.
I've got this. And he did.
And it's just so much fun. You know, he won a race on the Friday. I think it was a maiden race. You know, Frankie's getting older. He doesn't want to jump off every horse. So it was the first one he won at Keeneland. And they bring him in the winner's circle. He doesn't jump off. He got booed. He got back on the horse and then jumped off. But yeah, he got booed.
Did he really?
He got booed.
Oh, my gosh.
He didn't jump off.
He is a showman. He's 53 years old. He can't do that every time, right?
Yeah.
God bless him. Here's another subject that we don't talk a lot about. Brad Cox won a stakes race. Gee, we've never heard that before here on the TDN Writers Room podcast. He won the Lexington with Encino. It was the first ever dirt start for this horse after racing on the Tapita at Turfway Park. He's got 40 points now. He's in the Kentucky Derby. Florent Giroux rode in that race. I don't think he's going to ride him back because he has just a touch. So I guess that Brad Cox is looking for a rider, maybe Frankie Dettori, who knows? But, the Lexington is a nice enough race, but you really don't see many powerhouse horses come out of it and make do in the Kentucky Derby. But I've learned the hard way, never to underestimate Brad Cox.
Yeah, do not underestimate him. And I didn't see really any excuse from the Wine Steward. I thought Dilger ran well for Mike Ryan to be third at 38-1. But Encino, making his very first start on the dirt, Flo did the right thing. He didn't let him get any kickback. He just went. So, yeah, it was good. It's not probably going to be enough points to get him in.
Oh, I think it is, Zoe. I think he's 19th already, yeah.
Okay. All right.
And he'll probably move up a spot when Christophe Clement draws a line through deterministic in the Kentucky Derby, which he said he is likely to do. What's interesting about Encino, it's just a perfect example of how difficult it is now for handicappers in the Kentucky Derby. Because this horse was described after he won the Battaglia by Tessa Walden, who is Brad Cox's assistant, as being, he's a big, beautiful horse, but as being mentally immature. Specifically, he loses focus, right? And he tends to look around a little bit and tends to get a little bit of a wandering eye. And that's why for the Battaglia, they wanted him to have a target. They thought that would keep him a little bit more focused on his business when he had a horse in front of him. And it worked out perfectly in the Battaglia. But as you pointed out, Zoe, in the Lexington on dirt for the first time, the last thing they wanted was for him to get kickback. He had a couple of other really fast horses in there, pace horses in Hades and Lucky Jeremy, and he just outbroke them. He broke exceptionally quickly and went to the lead. But, okay, if he and they commented that he was, Florent Giroux said he was a little lost out there, looking around and all that. You know, a lot of times riders say that, and it doesn't really translate into performance in the afternoon. But this horse is obviously lightly raced. He's obviously still improving. He's going to improve, theoretically, with experience. Back in the day, these horses had already run 10, 12, 15 times. And all that improvement from experience was already baked into their past performances. Now we have to judge horses like Encino. We don't know what the ceiling is. We don't know how much more they can improve with experience, if any. That's just one of the X factors that not only horse players don't know, but the trainers and the jockeys themselves don't know where the ultimate ceiling is on a horse like this.
Do you remember handicapping like the Derby 15 years ago? You would never handicap a race and be like, well, you know, he's the little green. There were no green horses back then. It was, are they good enough or are they not good enough? But no one ever said this horse is green. I don't know how he's going to act because they'd already run 5, 6, 7, 8 times.
Right.
Yeah. And now we're worried about green horses.
There was none of this. So how's this horse going to handle kickback?
Yeah.
Right? Oh, my God. Yeah, exactly. The TDN Writers Room, as always, is brought to you by the Pennsylvania Horse Breeders Association, the PHBA. I was a big fan last year before the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint of a filly by the name of Roses for Deborah. I thought she had a great chance to win. She finished 9th of 12 in there, but the Pennsylvania bred Roses for Deborah bounced back in a big way this past weekend at Keeneland, winning her first start since the Breeders' Cup, the Grade 3 Giants Causeway Stakes. It was her fourth stakes win, second integrated stakes. Trainer Christophe Clement says Roses for Deborah will head next to either the Intercontinental in grade two against Phillies and Mares, or against the boys again, maybe, in the grade one Jiper. Both of those races are during the Belmont Stakes Festival, which this year will be at Saratoga. Meanwhile, over at Laurel, Disco Ebo led wire to wire in the $100,000 Primonetta Stakes. The five-year-old mare is now a stakes winner at age 2, 3, 4, and 5. Isn't that cool? So to become a Pennsylvania breeder of a horse like Disco Ebo and eligible for a piece of $30 million in breeder's incentives, you can go to pabred.com, or you can do it the old-fashioned way and call 610. Wait, there's more numbers. That's the area code. 444-1050. 610-444-1050.
The state of Pennsylvania has the best breeders program in the entire United States.
When you buy a yearling, it's a little bit like buying a lottery ticket. And we are trying to provide the lottery ticket that the likelihood is to hit the jackpot.
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Uncle Heavy Late, it's a photo finish.
Pennsylvania and the PHBA have the best state bred program in the country, bar none.
The winner, Uncle Heavy, he's a three-year-old bred in Pennsylvania.
Can't get out of my mind. I saw him down at OBS for the two-year-old sale. His breeze was spectacular. And then topped the sale. Everything he did in his career, breaking his maiden sprinting on the dirt.
Very, very impressive debut.
Winning a grade one, stretching out.
Breezing through the stretch. He's the real deal.
And then the Breeders' Cup at Del Mar.
He's just too good. Corniche wins the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
And then going on and being a champion two-year-old. Extremely difficult to do.
Obviously, Quality Road has done enough for all of us to understand what he's doing. I thought Wasted Tears was a very, very good mare, Najran mare. She obviously won the Ginny Wiley Stakes. Also, a course record holder in the Ouija board. So, really good female family, good sire line. Was delighted with him physically and was excited to breed to him.
It's very important for us to breed physical to physical and try to get the best physical cross. We're very happy with the foal we've gotten. He's got a great natural shape to him, a great hip, got a lot of power behind, very nice balance to him, plenty leg. You always like to see a horse have enough leg. Also, he's a very intelligent foal, you know, pricks his ears, has good presence to him.
This is a Corniche filly out of Anima Jamella. Been a standout since she was born. Very strong, very well made, good mover, really, you know, everything we were hoping for.
You know, he's got a really sharp eye, good shoulder, neck set, nice top line, like the way he finishes out behind, but he really sort of travels over the ground smoothly and just has a real sharpness to him about his body and is exactly what I was hoping for. But I mean, we all know that hopes and dreams are not actually what they always pan out to be, so when they pan out, you're double down.
And the TD and Writers Room brought to you by our longtime friends at the Green Group, which, as we like to say, and as Lynn Green likes to say, is a tax accounting and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry and designed to help save you money in this mid-April date on your tax bill.
Welcome in now. The Green Group guest of the week, it is Mr. Dennis Albaugh, who is the head of the Albaugh Family Stable. And once again, they're in the Kentucky Derby this year and with a serious contender, Catching Freedom. Dennis, we welcome you as the Green Group guest of the week. This is going to be your seventh Derby starter since 2016. And you're not like Mike Rapoli going out and buying 100 yearlings every year. How have you done it? You haven't won yet, but you had a great finish last year. What is going right that you, your family and your operation are getting this many horses into the Derby?
You know, we've actually had 10 horses in the last 7 years at the Derby. So we had three last year, which was a unbelievable record. We got a team of guys that helped me pick out horses. Every year I go over to the Keeneland and look at those horses. And there's like 1,000 horses for sale. And I said, we're going to pick one of these. It's going to be the Derby, right? But my team, I got my hats off to them. Well, we've done it. And they did it again this year with a good contender.
And that would be Catching Freedom, Dennis. So you were third with Patio Prado in partnership with Donegal quite a while ago, and then third last year with Angel of Empire. Tell us a little bit about the excitement level with Catching Freedom now, who seems to be getting better and better each time he runs.
You know, he's made some mistakes in the last two or three races, and we're with a very good trainer, Brad Cox, and I think hopefully the horse is over some of those mistakes and doesn't get clear to the back of the field and have to charge clear to the front of the field, because in a 20-horse field, it's not going to be easy to get around all of them. So we're excited about the draw party and coming up, and hopefully we catch a good number there.
Dennis, I've got two questions for you, and I have to start with, where are you? That looks absolutely fabulous behind you. We need a little tour of exactly where you are.
I'm actually in my car barn. I collect old Chevrolet cars. It's a convertible collection, and I've got every year from 1912 to 1975, the years that the Chevrolet made convertibles. I started out with just a few, and then it just kept adding a few, and now I'm up to 192 in this facility.
Wow. What's your favorite?
Probably these Copos. They're Yanko Camaros, and then at the back of me, there's sets of what's called a Future Liner. GM only made 12 of them back in the 30s, and they went around and displayed. They put a big tent up, and they put these 12 big buses around the tent, and they got the public in, and that's how they sold cars. And then TV came along in the early 40s, and that they parked these buses. So I found one, and it's refurbished and all back up to good standards.
Do you drive any of them around?
Oh, I try to drive every car once every 3 years. It's a process getting these all running and keeping the fuel from going old. I have a couple of guys that take care of them for me.
Well, so correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, I've got a question here. So you're in Altoona, Iowa, correct? That's where your office is?
Actually, Ankeny, Iowa.
Ankeny, Iowa. All right. Altoona is where Prairie Meadows is. Okay, so correct. Ankeny, Iowa, where you've got your car collection, and you're also a golf aficionado, and you also have a golf course adjacent to your office, correct?
Right outside of this facility is my golf course, yes.
Wow. You're living the life, Dennis.
Yeah, I got a lot of expensive habits, horse racing being one of them.
I'm certainly coming to visit. Golf and fast cars, I like.
Yeah.
One question on Catching Freedom. If you could map out a trip for Catching Freedom in the Derby, you said he makes some mistakes. What are the mistakes he does not need to make?
You know, he gets out of the gate fine, and then he slows down a little bit. and then he's got a burst that's unbelievable. He's bred right to get the distance. We've loved his breeding all along. When we went to the sale a couple years ago, I said, I want a Constitution. I love that horse. It's out of a Tappet. And so we found a good mare that was mounted up to the Constitution. And quite often you set at the auction and these go way north of what I want to spend on horses. We try to stay. I put them on a budget and we go past it every year. But anyway, we search them out pretty good. I got 7 people on my team that helped me search out the horses.
And Dennis, as we sit here, what, 3.5 weeks or less than 3 weeks to come to Kentucky Derby, do you consider Catching Freedom your best chance yet? You know, even better than last year with Angel of Empire.
You know, actually, I do. We're actually 19 days away. I don't sleep a lot at night thinking about the Derby. But he's actually done. He's got a lot of speed. He just needs to not slow down right off the bat, because with 19 other horses out there, it's hard to get through that field, as our Angel of the Empire had trouble last year making the move at the right time. So we kind of want a outside post, not clear outside. Ideally, I'd like to draw somewhere between a 6 and 15, but that'll be in a couple of weeks. That's a Saturday drawing. So that would be our ideal, so that he doesn't get trapped in behind a whole bunch of horses, have to go completely wide around them. That's the furthest way, obviously, around the racetrack.
So, Dennis, you first got introduced to horse ownership through your son-in-law, Jason Lusch, and a claiming horse at your hometown Prairie Meadows there. What about the sport at that point really hooked you into it and made you want to progress the way you've progressed?
We started out with at Prairie Meadows with a couple horses, and then we bought into this horse called Miss Macy Sue. It spoiled me. It kept going around the country winning races, and today it's a mare, and it's kicked off a lot of good babies, Not This Time, Liam's Matt, and many others. And I'm actually going to see it right ahead of the Derby. I'd like to get out there once or twice a year to take a look. We keep them in Kentucky. Iowa's got a lot of ice in the winter, so I would love to have them right next to me, but Kentucky's where you want to be with the horses.
And what a cool mare she has been. Like, I can go back in time. I remember her with Kelly Von Hemel. I remember Perry Compton. It took her a while to break a maiden. I remember when Perry, one of my favorite riders, that's a throwback, old school. Randy, you probably know Perry too, don't you?
Right, I do. Yes, I do.
Yeah, so Perry was one of these. He's about 6 foot tall. I don't think he ate since 1962 or something ridiculous.
Right. But,
just a cool guy. I might have even worked her once for Kelly Von Hemel. And yeah. I just followed her throughout her racing career. And then lo and behold, we're looking at horses by Liam's Map and not this time. I mean, how cool is that for you to be involved off the bat with a mare like that?
Oh, man, it's unbelievable. I don't know how you could have got a better mare. And this horse is a real friendly horse. It's really, it's like our pet. It's very nice. And the whole I got my whole family involved in this. Every one of them are very keen on this derby. All the girls are already got their dresses picked out and their hats picked out. It's a whole, bringing the whole family over for the derby. We're very excited about it.
Dennis, let's talk about Not This Time. I guess it's sort of a two ways of looking at it. The glass is half empty is that he didn't really get to have a full career after getting injured after the is a two-year-old after the Breeders' Cup.
Yes.
Glass is half full because he's won hell of a sire, stands for a ton of money. And I understand you still own 50% of him.
Yeah, we still own. It was a 52 circuit or 52 share. And we still own the majority of that shares of that. And he just keeps kicking off good runners. And so looking back, I wish I'd have kept all of them. But anyway, if you don't take some money off the table once in a while, this sport can get very expensive.
Well, let me ask you this. I mean, you talk about how expensive it can be. Is just having this sire alone enough to put you in the black? I imagine it is, right?
It is. Yes. Especially this year. Now that the stud fee is raised to $150,000, it's definitely we're paying back all the years I've borrowed from my personal to put in the horse business.
Well, $150,000, if you breed him to 200 mares, that's $30 million a year. If you own half, that's $15 million a year. That'll pay for a lot of those bills, Des.
We recouped in 1 year. Yes, yeah, you're right. We recouped in 1 year.
So that's sort of the cheat code, I think, to making money in thoroughbred ownership, so to speak, is to find a stallion that is well-received and is that successful. But most owners will sell 100%. Because you had to have some good offers for him from selling.
We had him fighting over him.
Why did you decide to hang on to 50%? What was your strategy? What were you thinking?
You know, I really didn't even want to sell him. But when you go to the auction, and any more of the auctions are very expensive to buy thoroughbreds, and there's a lot of teaming up going on, and I mainly kind of keep our own with the exception of a few partners along the way. But anyway, we decided that it came recoup some of the money that I'd spent through the years would be the answer. So that's why we put just half of them up for sale.
It didn't have anything to do with the fact that you let Liam's Map go and you named this horse Not This Time because of that you wanted to be still in with a piece of him. And look how he's turned out. I mean, we've bought a couple of Not This Times. I'm at OBS right now, and we've been looking at a lot of them. Like, he is an A-plus stallion.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We were very happy when we sold Liam's Map for $800,000. My son-in-law and me were jumping up and down, high-fiving each other. Well, then he went on to win over $3 million racing, mm-hmm. and then he ended up in the stallion farm somewhere around $11 million, and he's kicking off some very nice horses right now. So we said, we're not selling the next one, not this time. So that's where that name came around.
Dennis, I take it when you and your team go to the sales, the primary goal is to win the Kentucky Derby. You don't buy many fillies. What do your advisors tell you? What do they look for? What are the little secrets to finding a horse that can develop into a top three-year-old like you have with so many?
We start out about a month prior to the auctions with a guy searching all the bloodlines. And then we move from that. And when I got a team of people, Barry from Ocala does a very good job. And he picked up, I'm trying to think of his last name right now, but I'm stumbling with that.
Is it Barry Bucklehammer?
Yes, it is. Yes. He's got a team of people with him that get into the auctions even prior to him getting at Keeneland and going out and checking with the barns and looking them over. And they do a terrific job. So when I get there, we're broke down to about 300 horses, which is still a lot to look at. and my son-in-law does a great job of helping us pick them out, Jason Luch. And he, then we start, and then we, then lots of times you get this, a list of horses you want to build, and then they go in, they go way north of what you want to spend. So we have to try to regroup and say, okay, now let's make a run at this one. But when we went to that sale 2 years ago, I said, I want a Constitution. I'm coming home with a Constitution. I love that horse. I like the bloodline, and we found one that had a good mare. And finding names for these horses has always been a real challenge. So I challenged my office over there. I gave them the name of the mother of the horse, and we catch my drift. I was stumbling with the name there. Catch my drift, and then Constitution. That's where the word freedom came from. America's got a lot of freedom. And that, so we named it. I actually love this name of this horse this year. So,
Dennis, have you allowed yourself to dream yet what it might be like after coming close so many times to be standing in that winner's circle come first Saturday in May?
Well, I guess there's a special room in Churchill. I haven't been to it yet that they take the once you win it. So I couldn't be happier to drink that horse with the flowers, and just the excitement of the, just getting to the Derby is a big honor. And with all the things. And so we're very blessed to have one of the contenders that are, I think, got a good chance this year. So
Dennis, you've been tremendously successful in business, the agricultural chemicals business, totally a self-made man. And now you've progressed in short order from dabbling with Iowa breeds and claiming horses of Prairie Meadows all the way to the top of the game. So I got two questions for you. Number one, what has surprised you the most about the thoroughbred racing sport?
It's a lot of excitement. There's a lot of high lows in this business. We've been on both sides of that side. We've had them get injured, like not this time did. We thought it had a great running gear. We had another one named Dennis Moment that came out of the gates at the Breeders' Cup and went down, clear down to its chest, and then got back up and never really run well after that. And then we've had big-time success stories of when you go to these prep races and you get qualified for the Derby. There's a lot of excitement there, and very happy with that this year.
And with all your experience now at the top level, breeding, owning, what would you like to see changed? And what could be improved?
There's a lot of discussion around this HISIS on all the things. And, nobody likes change in this business, but I think the industry probably needed some of that. And so I think the regulations, once that all settles down, will be good for the industry. And I guess the other thing is, it's getting very expensive to stay in the thoroughbred. Once you don't see a lot of single people going out and buying horses anymore. Most of it is these groups or the big farms and stuff. It's not a cheap game to get into anymore. So anyway, change would be, I don't know how you would change that, because obviously if I'm a seller, I want the highest price I can get out of my horse too. So,
Dennis, let's change sports for a minute. You're from Iowa. What did you make of the Caitlin Clark phenomenon?
Oh, I love that girl. She was out here playing on my golf course and a charity event. Boy. And she's a pretty good golfer, actually. Yeah. That's probably not surprising, because she's been unbelievable for the sport. And not only Iowa, I think the whole United States, she's got people watching ladies basketball. And then I watched the draft last night. She went to our first one. So couldn't be prouder of that girl. She's right close to us here, or where her hometown is.
Dennis, that was fabulous. Thank you.
Thank you guys very much. I'm excited to see you all over there at the Derby Week.
All right. Good luck to you.
All right. Thank you.
As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Dennis Albaugh will receive a free 1 hour tax consultation with the Green Group. Hell, he may already use the Green Group for all we know. For more information on how the Green Group can save you money on taxes, visit www.greenco.com.
Are you paying too much in taxes? The Green Group can help. There's a reason the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisors. They save you money and share successful strategies. Over the past 40 years, the Green Group founder, Len Green, has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport, like Eclipse Award-winning champions Jaywalk and Wonderwheel. His DJ stable competes at the highest level and has received the game's most prestigious honors. Len Green's in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the thoroughbred business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
I talked earlier about one of our new sponsors, or one of our old sponsors, in Pleasant Acres. I was talking about Chess Chief. And earlier today, I managed to hunt down Christine Jones, who is the stallion director at Pleasant Acres, to find out just who do they have.
So, Christine, we're here at OBS. Who have you got? Who have you got standing at Pleasant Acres?
Well, I'm very proud to say that we have 13 stallions in all. And each of them is very important to us for different reasons, obviously. But I'd just like to say a couple of things in regard to, well, first of all, let's talk about Magic on Tap. He has his first foals this year, and they are absolutely terrific. I couldn't ask for a better crop for his first group of progeny. So that's helping me in my booking department as well. So that's always a plus. Then we can move on to our new big guy, Verifying. The first son of Justified is standing in Florida. The only one of two that are standing in the United States. So that brings us just a whole nother level of where we're trying to go.
And I love Verifying. I watched him run. He's a half to that wonderful, wonderful mare, Midnight Bisou, right?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. It's trained by Jeff Bloom, who also is in the partnership of people on this spectacular young stallion.
What can you tell me about Simplification? Is he the hometown hero?
Simplification is definitely our hometown hero. He is the Florida Horse of the Year. And I'm happy to tell you that the owner of Simplification is supporting him in every way possible, which certainly helps me a lot. It's nice to know that they are bringing between 25 and 30 mares to him themselves. So the outside people will be able to count on a lot of support from them in the ring.
Wishing you the best of luck. It's a fabulous lineup. It really, really is. So what would you tell people to get them out to Pleasant Acres to come and see your stallions?
Well, I would just say that I invite everyone to come out and visit us, whether you're going to buy something this year or not. We count on our breeders. If we do not have our breeders, we don't have anything. So my thanks to you.
Brilliant. Thanks.
Many thanks to Christine Jones, and yes, we'll be talking a lot more about all these fantastic stallions standing at Pleasant Acres.
Well, guys, let's go out to Hot Springs, Arkansas, where there was another big weekend of racing at Oaklawn Park with the Apple Blossom and the Count Fleet. And Adair Manor got the job done to win the Apple Blossom for trainer Bob Baffert. I talked about how good Applebee's record is in the U.S. period. How about Baffert at Oaklawn? 40 for 93 in his career, 43% with 32 stakes winners. A lot of those are three-year-olds, horses on the way to the Kentucky Derby, but Bob Baffert has not improved. He's not a one-trick pony. He has an older mare who's very, very good, and she wins this race. And I can't wait till she meets up somewhere with Idiomatic, which certainly has to happen. But Baffert, Adair Manor, and Juan Hernandez get into the winner's circle. Wet Paint was second choice for Randy's favorite stable with his Godolphin colors on today. And she didn't do much running at all, finished sixth.
No, she didn't. She did not. I don't think she really had much of an excuse, but I think we should let Randy go first in this one, because my first question to you, Randy, you have an awful lot of favorite horses. I mean, now, two fills. We're talking about Adair Manor. We're talking about Dermasota Gaki. Like, when you were a kid, did you have favorite movie stars that hung on your walls, and your walls were just full of all your favorites? Because you got a lot of favorite horses. You are racing's number one fan right now.
You left out Senor Buscador.
You can't leave out
the Dubai World Cup winner, right? It's Senor Buscador.
I'm taking a tally.
Look, I like horses like Adair Manor. I mean, I like horses that just like seize control of a race right away, like she did in the Apple Blossom, and like another horse that we'll talk about in just a second that won the Count Fleet. You know, Adair Manor did try Idiomatic last fall in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. She couldn't make the early lead in a very fast-paced race that Idiomatic was a part of. And even though it was at Santa Anita, she still kind of faded a little bit and finished seventh. Got beat three lengths in there. But in the Apple Blossom, Adair Manor was 3-5. She was dominant on paper, and she ran a heck of a race to win it. And speaking of Senor Buscador, her stablemate, his stablemate, Flying Connection in the barn of trainer Todd Fincher, ran an outstanding race to finish second in the Apple Blossom behind Adair Manor, because she's a horse that normally, based on her Sunland form, is up close to the pace. And she was shuffled back, pinched back at the start to last, and decided last. And yet she still managed to work her way through the field and finish a solid second behind Adair Manor. But look, it was all about Baffert and Juan Hernandez and going wire to wire again with Adair.
Bob picking up his second Apple Blossom. His first one was all the way back in 2012 with Plum Pretty. So good to see him back in the win column. I'm at OBS. Adair Manor was sold in the June sale for $340,000. Julie Davies, very, very happy about that. But my biggest question is, if she faces Idiomatic, who's bigger? Because the pair of them are probably both at least 17 hands.
Mm. We discussed that at the Breeders' Cup last year prior to the distaff, and it just depends on which camp you're in. The Baffert camp believes that Adair Manor is bigger. The Bill Mott or the Brad Cox camp, the Judmont camp, believes that Idiomatic is bigger. And we actually pitched the idea to both barns of getting the horses together side by side. But before the Breeders' Cup, that was just asking a little bit too much. Maybe we'll try that at some point in the future. Put the tape measure on.
Yeah, I'll just run around with my tape measure. We should have a wager. Oh, by the way, what are we sending me?
That's right, Randy.
Bottle of some.
A bottle of, what was that from? Yeah. You are correct. Just FYI, outran Impel. Neither won, but you were right. Just FYI, was closer to winning than Impel was. And so, yes, I owe you your choice of a bottle of spirits.
Well, didn't you say Opus One? I'll take Opus One. I'm good with that.
We'll talk about that.
Randy, you can't get out of this. We have this on tape.
I'm not trying to get out of it. Okay. I'm trying to get out of it.
So here's another thing that we don't talk a lot about. Steve Asmussen having a fast sprinter. There's just one after another, after another, year after year after year. And Skelly, who won the Count Fleet, has now won 8 straight in the U.S., did get beat in Saudi Arabia, ran second. But again, of such an overpowering performance, he was off a step slow and then rushed up into a 21-2 first quarter. It made no difference at all. He was just the fastest horse out there. He was the speed of the speed, and he just ran them off their feet. And once again, the Asmussen camp has perhaps the most talented sprinter in the country. It's amazing how well he does with this kind of horse. It's just an assembly line of these fast rocket ships that he sends out. And the newest kid on the block is Skelly. Zoe?
He was cool. And the one thing, and I've said this time and time again about Steve Asmussen, is once his horses get good, he has this incredible ability to keep them good and keep them at an extraordinary level for a long amount of time. Now he's won, 9 of 14 starts. What kind of buy speed figure did he get, Randy?
103.
103.
Coming,
do you remember
coming
he
back
got the
from
24?
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
Close to that, yes.
Steve is just amazing, just keeping these horses happy, healthy, and winning races at a high level. He was fantastic.
He reminds me a lot. I'm sure they're different in appearance and probably different in temperament, but he reminds me a lot of Matole, the horse that Asmussen had that won the Breeders' Cup Sprint back in 2019. Matole also won the Count Fleet at Oaklawn. He won 9 of his last 10 races, was regularly running super fast buyer speed figures. And right now, I agree with you, Bill. I mean, if the Breeders' Cup Sprint was upcoming, let's say in a month, Skelly would undoubtedly be the favorite for that. It was a long time between now and Breeders' Cup this fall at Del Mar, but right now he looks to me certainly like the best sprinter in America, at least of the ones that we've seen so far this year.
Now, I'm going to ask for what may be an exercise in futility, but there's 19 days to go to the Kentucky Derby from when we are taping this on Tuesday. giving the, that we have the right to change our minds as much as we want, right up until post time, I want to pin everybody down. Who's your pick to win the Kentucky Derby? And who's your long shot pick? Or, you know, not, let's say, who's your pick beyond Sierra Leone and Fierceness? So I'll start it off. I'm a big Sierra Leone guy. I've been on record thinking that his bluegrass was just fantastic. He will be my pick. My other horse to watch out for will be Just a Touch, second in the Gotham, second in the bluegrass. He's had three lifetime starts. And just like Randy was talking about, you know, with so little racing, how much are these horses going to improve and trying to project forward? Trained by Brad Cox, a horse that seems to just be getting it together, I think he's one of those candidates that could improve quite a bit in the Derby. He's not going to be 50-1, but he's not going to be the favorite either. So I got Sierra Leone and Just a Touch. Randy?
Now, since you appropriately qualified this by saying that we have the right to change our minds multiple times if necessary, you know, I'll point out that this will have quite a bit to do with post position. I'm all usually of the mind that post position is overrated in the Kentucky Derby. I really think it is. But when it pertains to speed horses and where they draw in relation to other speed horses, I think post position can play a very important role, especially in a 20-horse field. So you don't want to overthink it. I tried to overthink it with American Pharoah back in 2015, coming up to the Kentucky Derby, because I looked at the race and I correctly handicapped that American Pharoah was going to be farther back than he had been at any point in his career. I correctly handicapped that American Pharoah would be wide, probably around both turns to boot, and yet he won anyway, right? So post position wise, you know, so I don't want to overthink it is my point here. And if all the horses, if all the leading contenders run their best races, Fierceness wins, right? And I know he was bothered in the Champagne, and I know he didn't really run his race in the Holy Bull, but he was so impressive in the Florida Derby that right now, pending the draw, I don't want to see him down inside of the other speed horses, then I think he would be my horse. I don't think there is some pace in the Derby, but I don't think it's going to be out of control like it was last year when Mage came from the clouds to win. And I agree with you, Just a Touch for a long shot. I think his long shot odds are starting to creep down and down.
Right.
He's becoming a big wise guy horse. I'm guessing right now you're probably looking at somewhere around, you know, 10-1, 11-1, mm-hmm. something like that. But that's a nice price.
Mm-hmm. I'm going Sierra Leone. I think there's going to be a pretty good pace up front. And, you know, it's funny. I was talking to Jacob West last night. He was speaking to, like, Johnny V and talking about Fierceness. And, you know, can he handle the Derby and all this kind of stuff? And, you know, you have to be on the lead, and that doesn't always happen. And Johnny V was like, always dreaming. Medina Spirit, authentic. They all went to the lead and they won. And he is one of them that's going to do the same thing with the same rider in Johnny V. He will go forward no matter what. I like Sierra Leone. I'm scared about Fierceness. As far as a long shot, you know, initially I threw on Forever Young, but I'm not sure he's going to be a long shot because he's going to take so much Japanese money. Even if we don't bet him over here, he will be one of the shorter priced horses. And I love the way he's trained at Churchill Downs. So I'm going to throw in Domestic Product. He's a little green. I liked his race in the Tampa Bay Derby. He's just winning. He's just starting to come around. He's figuring things out. I mean, can Chad Brown run 1-2? Probably not. But yeah, that's my long shot.
Well, I wouldn't put anything past Chad Brown. Of course he can be 1-2. If it's the Diana handicap every year, he's going to be 1-2-3-4. So why can't he run 1-2 in the Derby? But some good insights there, Zoe. Thank you.
The TDM Writers Room is brought to you by my bosses at XBTV. The XBTV work of the week is Arabian Night. Now, don't change the channel. He did literally work in 38 flat. You're not seeing things. It was his first work since finishing fourth in the 2023 Breeders' Cup Classic to Wider Barrio as the 3-1 second choice. He's back on the work tab, working in 38 in company. Arabian Knight won last year's Southwest Stakes and Grade 1 Pacific Classic. He was third in the Haskell. Bob said he is very happy to have Arabian Knight back on the work tab. And if you watch him come down the lane, he's on the outside there, and he looks like a happy, happy horse. Not sure maybe Bob was quite that happy, because 38's an awful slow time for one of Bob's runners, especially one as good as him, but it looks like he's coming back on just the right track. We'll be right back after this message.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
And the TD and Riders Room is also brought to you by our friends at West Point Thoroughbreds, which have been knocking on the door at Keeneland with graded stakes placings in the Transylvania, the Madison, the Maker's Mark Mile. And then on Sunday, boom, 4-year-old colt Ohana Honor, a son of Honor Code trained by Shug McGahee, went wire to wire in a second level, mile and a half turf allowance to win by a widening 5 3/4 lengths. You'll probably see Ohana Honor next, undoubtedly, in a stakes race somewhere. And West Point has also been active at this week's OBS April sale, where last year it acquired Carson's Run, who went on to win the Grade 1 Summer Stakes at Woodbine. OBS is so proud of Carson's Run that that horse is now gracing the cover of the April sales catalogs. If you want to join a West Point partnership and be vaulted into the world of instant camaraderie, you can learn more at westpointtb.com.
Well, that's a wrap on this week's show. I want to thank my partners, Randy Moss and Zoe Cadman. Our editors are Aaliyah LaRocca and Nathan Wilkinson, and our producers are Katie Petruniak and Anthony LaRocca. Where's Lucy?
She's MIA. I was actually going to give her, she went to the groomer yesterday. She looked so pretty. I was going to give her star moment here, but there must be food upstairs. My wife must have something going on up there with food.
All right. Randy, it's part of your job. That's part why we pay you the big bucks on this podcast. Lucy's the biggest star we have. We need her involved in this, okay?
Lucy and rabbit holes are what I'm
that's right.
For.
Yeah. Right. All right. Thanks everybody for tuning us in and listening. Have a great weekend of racing. We'll talk to you next week.
Cheers.